boss.
Yes.
I have dishonored the Yakuza. I have failed in my mission.
We do not take this lightly. I want you to know that everybody in this room is disappointed in you.
Boo! Well, I share your disappointment in myself and hopefully regain some respect in your eyes. I'm going to take this katana and make a sacrifice. I'm going to cut off a piece of me.
Thank you for having the initiative to take care of what needs to be taken care of. I am disappointed in you, but also I respect that the buck stops with you.
Thank you, boss.
Let's see that finger. Let's see that finger come off. Whoa.
Oh my god.
No. Oh no.
Holy shit.
There.
I cut off my own dick.
No. No.
Do you respect me again?
God.
No.
Have I regained my place in the family?
Why did you? Absolutely not.
Oh my god. Hurts.
You're gonna die.
Oh,
you're gonna die.
God.
You're gonna die.
The second wave of pain. Oh god. The adrenaline wore off.
Oh my god.
Jesus Christ.
It was supposed to be like how, like, remember last week when I also messed up and cut off my finger and now everyone's like okay with it? You were supposed to do exactly like that's what we do here.
Well, I thought, but you cut off your pinky. I thought this would, like, I'd kind of yes and that.
No! Nobody wanted this!
You don't heighten from pinky to dick.
Okay, sorry. I regret that. Oh.
Somehow your act of trying to gain respect has been disrespectful.
You're like right. I have diminished my standing in the Yakuza. Yeah. And to make it up for you.
What? No. Put it. No. Why?
I cut off my balls. that's worse.
Oh my god.
Oh, that hurts worse.
Oh god.
I need a towel or something.
You had more than a towel. I guess we should all take a moment here because we have learned something today. And it's that sometimes we don't know what's expected of us. We don't know what's going to impress the boss. But making an effort is not always the answer. Sometimes you should ask one or two basic questions before you take action.
Right. I've learned that now. And do you want me to, like, cut off my butt?
No, I don't want you to cut off your butt.
Okay, I'm glad I asked.
We bludgeon goons with bicycles and micromanage cabaret hostesses in dense dual protagonist action RPG Yakuza 0 this week on How Did This Get Played? It's How Did This Get Played, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and Warwick Davis as Willow-est video games of all time.
Wow.
That third W was by at Bofer D's Nuts.
Okay.
I know what you're doing. Submit yours at GetPlayedPod, hashtag WWW. Don't try to sneak that past us.
This is a family show.
I'm Nick Weiger along with Heather Ann Campbell.
I don't get it. Wait, what was the...
Bofer D's Nuts.
Bofer?
Bofer D's Nuts.
It's sort of like
Bofer?
Saying, like, both of these.
Oh, both of.
Yeah.
Bofer.
Wow. You just Bofer? Asked, what is Bofer? What a faux pas. If you did that to a Zoomer, you'd get hit with a Bofer D's Nuts.
And then they'd be like, got him. Sheesh.
And then you'd just be lowered into a grave.
Yeah. They hit you with a sheesh. You don't want to get sheeshed by a Zoomer.
No. No, you don't
Bofer?
Bofer. Or Bofa. Bofa, another variant.
Yeah.
Bofer?
This person is maybe
never
a little
heard Bofer.
Because they don't know us. Maybe they're being formal, perhaps.
Right. That's probably. Yeah. Well, you know what? We've got a lot about, we learned a lot about Japanese honorifics in this week's game.
Oh, boy.
Which ones are formal? Which ones are informal? Which ones are used for someone older than you?
I'm Heather Ann Campbell, along with our I'm Heather Ann Campbell, along with our producer, Matt Apodaca.
Hello, everyone.
Hello, everyone. And welcome back, Bofer.
Edge.
Jeez.
Boy, we have quite a game to discuss this week. I've been really, really looking forward to this discussion because I have a lot of thoughts on what we played. But before we do that, before we descend into what we call gaming hell, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're enjoying or something that's happening in our gaming lives by first spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven. Matt, say when.
Go for it, Heather.
I just want to say, PlayStation Nation, I still got your back. But when I saw that the Xbox was on sale at Walmart, knowing that I'm part of a video game podcast, I was like, okay, I got to get an Xbox. So I'm joining up on the Xbox Brigade. What do you guys call it?
Wow.
The X-Boys?
Yeah, we're the X-Boys.
The X-Boys? I had to I reactivated my Xbox Live account, and I haven't used it since the Xbox 360. So right now the profile picture is a giant high resolution circle with a tiny, tiny postage stamp like screenshot from my avatar on Xbox 360.
Uh-huh.
It's like looking at photographs from 2002.
Yes.
Like, they're very, very small.
Yes.
And, of course, I looked up my favorite game on Xbox 360, Settlers of Catan, and boy, oh boy, was I bummed out that it is no longer available.
Ah, time's up.
Mm. But, hey, you get the Xbox Game Pass library, which is extensive, and which includes this week's game, Yakuza 0.
Wow.
Are we just, that's it. We're just going right for it, huh?
Unless you have something else to discuss.
I got nothing to talk. I've done nothing. I think one of the things that people don't understand about this podcast, or maybe I've said it before, is the workload for this show can sometimes be omnipresent in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And for episodes like this, where we don't have a guest, part of it is, who the fuck are you going to ask, hey, can you drop 120 hours into a game that you may not enjoy so that you can talk about it for 70 minutes with us? That's a big ask.
Yes.
And then sometimes we're just, you know, I'm scared of people. So there are people I know, but I'm afraid to ask them, hey, do you want to do the show? But I kept thinking about that. For this episode, I'm like, this is a big fucking game. It's a huge goddamn game. And we can't... it's not a fucking movie podcast.
Right. That's the thing. We may need to rethink our format. We'll figure that out. That's a discussion we can have off pod. But I will say that Part of what we're trying to do is like, okay, let's have some, we discuss like, how do we make this more achievable for us where we can give these games the sort of comprehensive attention that they demand, but also like have other things that we can do with our lives. And so, you know, one of those things is picking shorter games. But the other thing is like, okay, hey, here's a game that we wanted to play anyway. And for me, this has been a game that's kind of been orbiting in my backlog for a long time. I believe that's the case with you too, Heather, right? You suggested this originally.
Yeah, enough people on Twitter have been like, you should play Yakuza next. You should play Yakuza next. And I was like, which Yakuza should I play first? And they were like, Yakuza 0. And I was like, okay. So Yakuza 0 is an action adventure game developed and published by Sega, which was originally released for the PlayStation 3 in 2015 in Japan. Its most recent release was was on a system I've never heard of, the Amazon Luna.
Oh, yeah.
The Amazon Luna in June of 2021.
That's That's Amazon's
Stadia.
Stadia. Yeah, that's theirs. Yeah.
Oh, their cloud service. Okay. Yeah.
God. So this is an open world game that takes place in Japan from December 1988 to January 1989 in Kamurocho and Sotenbori, which are sort of recreation, like mythologized fictional versions of Kabukicho and Dotonbori in Tokyo and Osaka. So the first you play as an up-and-coming pair of Yakuza or ex-Yakuza in the game. And that's, I mean, it's a GTA-like. Could you say that? It's a GTA-like?
Yeah, it's an open-world game. You can kind of pay the main narrative as much or as little attention as you like. But there is an endless array of things to do in this kind of sandboxy. And I would say that it is kind of, you know, as opposed to, because it's a huge game. It is a massive game. Like the amount of content that's in this game. Don't be deceived by how long to beat. You know, saying that you can finish this game in 30 hours. You can if you mainline it. But I think if you're actually experiencing what this game has to offer, what this world has to offer, you're going to spend a little bit more time in that. But it's like huge in scope. But it's not huge in scale. It's like a very, like both cities that you inhabit are pretty small maps. They're like the size of an RPG town. They're just jam-packed with content and quests.
Which is, I think, sort of an accurate game version of what it's like to be wandering around in Tokyo, especially in these neighborhoods. Like the Kabukicho is like it's dense as fuck. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been to Tokyo, I don't know, 7 or 8 times now, maybe more than that. And I've spent significant time there. And there are times where you're like, oh, I'm going to go check out this bar in this district. And you'll go to a neighborhood and it's like, okay, what floor is the bar on? It's not like I mean, New York maybe, but you're like, is this bar on the 16th floor of this building with 50 bars in it? Like, it's a really dense experience, and the addresses are all fucking crazy. So it's, I don't know. I had a lot of nostalgia feelings playing this game. A lot of, like, I went to an area. The first thing I did in the game is I went to an area where I've drank before, went to a bar in that stylized version of the area, ordered the drink that I usually drink when I'm at that bar, and just sat there. And I was like, this is a lot. This is, I'm having a weird feeling.
Right. And as someone who has never crossed an ocean, I am not well traveled. I will say that this is like, oh, it's like a fun vacation to this fictional Japan, because it does feel very jam packed and very alive. And it's also things like it's just the streets are pretty narrow. The alleys actually feel like alleys. Everything feels pretty compact. When you walk into a bar, it feels like, oh, there's space for one person to sort of walk. You know, everything is really, really compact. But so there's endless things to do in terms of, yeah, you can just eat and drink at so many restaurants. You can, you know, go to an arcade and play actual Sega games. They've just got an Outrun cabinet there, and you can play Outrun to your heart's content. There's like batting cages. There's pool.
Hang On, Space Harrier, Fantasy Zone. It's, I mean, you can like go to a fucking arcade and spend all day on the crane machines. What do you call them? UFO catchers.
Yes. Yeah. The claw machines, which are I got pretty good at, I'll say. But and then some of these things have quests involved, and others are just kind of there for funsies. Like it's just the array of things available. There was a point in this game where it's just like, here you can fish. And I was just like, fucking course there's fishing in this goddamn game. There's just you can just do absolutely everything that you could imagine.
Yeah.
You could do an interactive piece of software. And so there's that. But the main gameplay is combat based.
Like, the main thing is you are either Kiryu, who is one of the dual protagonists that Heather mentioned, who is, you know, like a very buff bruiser type, a big brawler of a dude, the strong silent type. And then there's also Majima, who is a Spike Spiegel from Cowboy Bebop, like a slithery sort of, he uses evasion more and counters more. But like so much of it is just beating the shit out of an endless array of thugs of various sorts.
I did not play Majima that way at all. I was like, oh, this guy's got a baseball bat. I'm going to unlock everything for the baseball bat.
Yeah. Yes.
Also, it was deep into the game until I discovered that the weapons that you equip can be used in combat. I thought they were just changing your stats. And then I was like, it's crazy to me that I can buy all these weapons and not actually use them. And nowhere in any tutorial that I experienced was it like, press down on the D-pad and you can use the sword that you have equipped.
See, because that's interesting, yes, to me. And I was saying this to Nick before we started recording. I think what's going to be interesting about this episode and this game in particular is that I think we all played it in a different way, because I didn't buy a single weapon one time in this game at all. I didn't do any of that.
Wow.
And yeah, you finished the main story, which I have not done yet. Yeah. I'm 36 hours deep in this game. I still haven't finished the main story.
That's something that I wanted to circle back to also. We were talking about the time commitment of this particular game and like, yes, the how long to beat. The how long to beat suggests like it's like 30 plus hours, like somewhere between 30 and 40 hours. I want to make it just perfectly clear. I think we started playing this game a month ago. Like we were like, let's play that as our next game. And we're like, that'll be one that we do for a while.
Right.
We had banked up a couple and we're like, we'll just play that over until we record again. And now we're recording it, I think it may be 3 to 4 weeks later.
Yes.
I've spent 6 to 8 hours on the Cabaret Club mini game on its own.
Right.
Because there's so much to go for it, Nick. What do you want to say?
I was going to say, we should talk about that, because it's so the two protagonists, you've got Kiryu, you've got Majima, and they really kind of parallel each other in that they are both exiled from the Yakuza for various reasons. One gets exiled within the narrative. He leaves the Yakuza because he's framed for murder. That's Kiryu. The other has been exiled already as the narrative begins, and the job he has been given is to manage this cabaret, which is a thing that I'm not as familiar with. Heather, I think you have maybe been to one of these, but it's like a hostess club where there are women who are basically there to just accompany patrons. So like you're there, you pay money for drinks, and then women come and sit with you and just make conversation with you. And one of the two protagonists manages one of these organizations, two of these organizations, ultimately.
So I haven't been to a hostess club, but I have been to, it doesn't exist anymore. I think it was called Queen Dolce or something like that near Akihabara. And it was a cafe where they serve drinks and maybe a little food. And the hostesses were women dressed as men who were giving a boyfriend experience to women who didn't want to feel threatened by actual men. So like the what are they called? Hostess and butler clubs or something like that. Like I think the guy ones, if you're like an insecure woman, you would go, and these dudes would be maybe a little intimidating to you. Like, right, if you hadn't talked to a lot of guys. But what
a dude
if you
like
went,
me, for instance.
Huh? Wait. What are you? Are you the one
going
to the club? No, you're
no,
talking.
No, I'm just saying, like,
I see.
Yeah, I'm talking. Yeah.
No, that's
what's
not
up?
What would.
What's troubling
no,
you?
I think that would be a really great introductory experience to a man for a woman, would be Nick Weiger, because
hey,
he's
buddy.
Like on the. He's like on the. He's like a low tier.
Right.
Like, low tier stuff at tea. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so I went and you get a drink, and my Japanese wasn't good enough to have like full blown conversations with these women dressed as men who were supposed to be boyfriends. But I did watch a woman come in with a gift for her quote boyfriend, and they unwrapped the gift and it was a sweater, and it felt like I was witnessing like a high school you know, like a behind the track and field high school moment of like a birthday. Mm-hmm. And the host went back into the back and then came back out in the sweater. And the girl blushed and ran out away.
Wow. That's amazing.
But yeah. So cabaret clubs are like a place you go, or a hostess club is, I guess, a place you go where a woman sits down with you and talks to you and you pay a ton of money. It's like, what do you call it? Escort services?
Right, but there's not necessarily a tacit understanding that there's going to be any sort of sexual contact. It's right. Just like we're just hanging out. It's literally I'm paying someone for their company, as is my understanding.
Isn't there like a documentary about this called like The Great Happiness Space or something? Let me hold on. Let me look it up. Happiness.
Heather's doing some quick Googling.
Space. Yeah, The Great Happiness Space.
And that's just specifically about the Japanese side of this.
Yeah, the great Happiness Space, Tale of an Osaka Love Thief, is a 2006 documentary film by Jake Clunell describing a host club in Osaka. So that would be a great introduction to all of these concepts.
Right. Because in the limited research I did on this as I was kind of like, you know, was peripherally aware of this and then you were immersed in it when playing this game, is that there's a bunch of different tiers of it. And so there's like, you know, there's ones where you literally just sit at a bar and talk to a woman. And then there's ones like the cabaret, which is in this game, which is this very elaborate thing that's targeted towards high rollers, Yakuza, and then also towards, you know, businessmen who are using their corporate accounts and are just spending, you know, millions of yen on bottles of champagne and talking to these women. And then so in this one, you start out at a cabaret, like a super duper high end one. And then you also, in the progression of the story, you acquire stewardship of a cabaret club, which is like a tier below, and it's like you have this glamorous club that you're running, but you also have this shitty club that you're starting from the ground up. And that's what you were saying about 10 minutes ago, Heather, that you sunk a bunch of time into.
Yeah. So look, you could spend an episode of this show deconstructing the sort of like assaults on feminism that this game engages. Yeah. The full-blown World War II effort put into recontextualizing women as objects and or like horses that you're breeding and training.
Yes.
Like there is.
There you give is them no, gifts I mean, and their skills improve.
Yeah. But I decided to enjoy the. I mean, it's like managing a soccer team.
It really is. Like,
each girl has her own strengths and weaknesses, and you can encourage some girls to develop different strengths and weaknesses. You can give them makeovers. You can buy them outfits so that they are cuter or funnier, because each gentleman that comes into the club has a different desire. He wants a girl who is really good at making him feel like he's loved, but also looks funny. Or he wants a mature type who's really good at like talking about various skills. So you have to have this like deep library of horses to offer each of the riders.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. It's a pretty good characterization of it. This is all to get more of the in-game currency, which is just straight up yen, to get more yen, which you can, and then you can use yen to upgrade your characters, but then also invest it further into this business. But it is, I did the same thing. Like I sunk a good amount of time into the cabaret club because it's just fun to just sort of build your stable, if you will, to acquire more women who are working in this club, and then you can upgrade them. Like you can train them, you can give them. It's depraved.
I should say that in my playthrough, I barely did any of this. Like I didn't. I hardly paid
completely
attention to it.
Completely optional.
Like because it was. I only did the like one time for each business that you have to do for the story. So then it tells you like, hey, this is now a thing you can do.
Right.
And then I just never went back to it.
So after I played through the first, cause you have to, using the cabaret club, you can take over five other clubs. And after I beat the first club, not only did I get such an insane amount of money that I was like, oh, this is so much faster for leveling than like beating up random dudes on the street. But additionally to that, you unlock more fighting styles. Now,
yes, right.
I found the combat frustratingly thin, as always, where I was like, I haven't had a challenge on any of these fucking fights. These guys are so easy to read. But I also enjoyed unlocking Majima's ability to jam his baseball bat into a man's throat and then kick the underside of the bat to knock out his front teeth. The game is both quirky and extremely violent.
Yes.
Like, very violent.
Hyper violent. So that's a thing that happens. So each character can switch between different stances. Majima has the one where his default stance is kind of that more slithery one I discussed. He's got the alternate stance where he whips out his bat, which he has all with him at all times. And then he's got another one, which is just a straight up breakdancing stance. He's like, it's capoeira kind of style fighting. And so like as part of that, you choose these stances, you're beating the shit out of guys, but you have these finishing moves you can use that are called heat actions, and they're all contextual. So for instance, a very simple one is like a guy is lying on the ground, he's prone, and then you pull his face up and then you like, you know, smash it with your other hand. But then there's other ones that are a lot more elaborate. For instance, one I got pretty early on is there's a box of nails item that you can pick up. I don't know if you guys experienced this. You put the box of nails in someone's mouth and then you like uppercut them. So it's like something you would see in like a GCW death match. It's so brutal.
Jesus.
And then there's ones that are sillier. Like there's ones where there's just like a tea kettle that you just like pour hot tea all over somebody.
Yeah.
Although I will never tire of picking up a bicycle, picking someone's bicycle up, clobbering someone over the head with it, and then jumping onto the bicycle on top of them. It's just like, it's some of they're so elaborate, and they're animations you see over and over again, but I think they're super fun, although some of them are really upsetting. It's this weird kind of contrast, I think, throughout the game, where you've got stuff that's really silly and light, and then also stuff that is just so dark and unnerving, and like horrible traumas are happening to characters. We see that Majima, who is like this kind of like he's involved in all these silly adventures, but part of his backstory is that his eye was gouged out and he was tortured for a year, and they were just waiting for him to die. And then he survived. So they're like, okay, well, we're gonna let this guy, you know, we're gonna give this guy a job. It's so fucking weird. But then his job is to manage this cabaret club.
And he's good at it.
He's great at it.
He's really good.
He's the king of the night.
I'm sure we'll probably talk about like the overall plot, but like from what I gathered toward the end of the game, obviously this one, I think this game chronologically came out after the first couple of installments. So this one serves as a prequel to the series.
That's and the way zero.
Where you get the where the characters end up is a very different place from where they start like the game. And like in particular, like Majima seems like he's like going to be going a little more. He's a little more ruthless in things like that. Probably as people know him more as this type of character. I forgot the original point I was making, but it was just the idea that they're both their stories are like they came back and made this prequel so you could understand these two characters more is interesting to me. And because like I had no prior context to these games, I found myself more interested in Majima's story because I think solely because I liked his vibe and I liked his outfit and I liked his His eye patch and business sense. I was like, this guy seems like a natural leader. I respect him. And then when you get to the end of the game, I was like, I don't really fuck with this. Like, I don't know if I like him anymore.
Kiryu is more of like, the kind of a vanilla alpha male.
Yes.
But his story is tied up in there's this parcel of land, this very small parcel of land. This is during, you know, the era Heather mentioned is this huge real estate bubble in Japan. And it's called the empty lot. And someone is murdered on the empty lot, and then Kiryu is framed for it. And so a big part of your gameplay, his equivalent of the cabaret club management, is he gets involved in commercial real estate because this guy, Tachibana, this character who we later learn was also involved in the Chinese mafia, is a little bit of a spoiler there. Is maybe a huge spoiler. I don't know. I'm fucking sorry. All right. Sorry.
Nick, you got to be careful with these spoilers.
This game came out six years ago. It's okay.
Yeah.
We're allowed one more only. Okay, and then more. We're in deep shit if we even spoil one more thing.
So this guy, Tachibana, who has one hand, and he is like, so he introduces you to... You have a real estate empire that you are managing. And then his thing is that you're just acquiring properties across the town, across, he's in Tokyo. Yes. And, I forget. Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's in Tokyo. So you're acquiring properties around Tokyo, Kamurocho, the neighborhood. And then you're improving them. And this is also so fucking complicated, and the UI is so obtuse, and there's so much stuff. Heather was talking about earlier that there's stuff that you just aren't told. There's so much stuff that's not documented that's so hard to parse, but I also sunk like 12 hours into this, and I'm still going because it's so fun to just improve your properties and to take over territory, because there's five different territories, the five billionaires, they're called, who are these real estate magnates. There's the Leisure King, Electronics King, the Pleasure King, and so on, who are all managing these various neighborhoods. You try to take over their sector of land, and then at some point you have to have a battle with them. First off, a battle of wits. In the case of the Leisure King, you have to beat him in karaoke. And then later on, you have to just literally beat the shit out of the Leisure King and all of his goons. So you have to like beat them all to a pulp. And then the Leisure King joins your team. You hire him. And this progresses. There's also, and I know I'm rambling a little bit, but the subquests we haven't even talked about, which are called sub-stories, are bananas. They are absolutely insane. Just as an example, this is one we were talking about earlier, Matt. There is a very clear analog for Michael Jackson in this game called Miracle Johnson. And Miracle Johnson is shooting a music video in Japan. Mm-hmm. So you get pulled in to be like, hey, we need you to help out. Again, this is in the midst of this very dark Yakuza narrative where people are being murdered and horrific assaults are happening. You're just like a director on the street that you meet earlier is like, hey, we need you to help out with Miracle Johnson's music video. He wants zombies to actually attack him. We're basically recreating Thriller. We want zombies to actually attack him. So you need to be his escort to beat up the zombies so they don't hurt him while he's filming his music video. And you act out this sub-story. You do this sub-quest. You finish it. Later on, you have another Miracle Johnson quest. Then Miracle Johnson goes to work for your real estate firm. It's nonsense.
Well, you mentioned karaoke battle as like a facet of a different game, like a second Inception tier of a battle system. And we haven't even talked about the mini games in the game. Like the cabaret club management and the real estate management are almost like macro games. And then there are mini games where you play, you can play pool, mahjong, you can do karaoke, and the karaoke is sort of like a rock band interface where like you press buttons when the character is singing different songs, or if a friend of yours is karaokeing, you press buttons in order to encourage and celebrate their performance. And
which
also these are songs that we've never heard. So you don't
no.
Yes.
You don't have an instinct for when you're going to be pushing the buttons, when it's going to speed up or slow down, unless you've played those songs multiple times. There's a mini game where you enter into an underground women's wrestling district.
And yeah, the cat fights.
Yeah, the cat fights. Cat
I forgot
fights.
About. I, how did I forget about this?
Matt, you got to do the cat fights.
I did do it, but I did it once.
You place bets on these two girls who are oil wrestling, essentially, mm-hmm. in bikinis, and they in order to win challenges between them, you do like a Rochambeau rock, paper, scissors interface where it's like you pick rock and hope the other person picks scissors. I hated that mini game. I couldn't win once. I didn't win a single fucking time in that mini game.
So this is, we talked about the cat fights as well. The cat fights are so obtuse and it's so unclear what you're supposed to be doing. I looked up guides and the guides and like the Steam discussions of the cat fights are like, I don't know, but I think this works. Like no one has any certainty as to how the systems that are in this game actually work with each other. The UI is so like, oftentimes the UI is like aggressively cluttered and it doesn't make sense what an item means or not. But I did figure out the cat fights. I did figure out how to make money on the cat fights. And it is like, so for instance, each there's rock, paper, scissors. And that is like the wrestling move that they are going to throw. And you ideally want to counter it with the, you know, the other rock. It's literally rock, paper, scissors. And they have like a 1 to 5 star rating in each of those. The 1 to 5 star rating, I think anyone would think is like their strength or their ability at that. It's not that at all. It's the probability that they will use that move. So the reason that Jennifer, who is like the highest rated fighter, is so difficult is not because she is more powerful, but because she is almost equally probable to use all three. So the way you win it is you pick someone who's got low odds and take them up against someone who has like, for instance, 5 stars in rock, 2 stars in scissors and 1 star in paper. And you just go with paper every single time because they're most likely to use rock. And you just
Holy
hope it works
shit.
Out. It's so, but like, there's no way that you could infer that from the interface. But still, I was like going to the real estate, and then while my real estate empire is while the cooldown on when I can collect again is going on, I'd go over to the cat fight. I'd wager 30 million yen on a cat fight. I'd triple my money. And I just got addicted to the cycle, even though I'm like, this sucks. This is poorly designed, and it's clunky as hell. And also, I'm so sorry, but like you touched on the misogyny in this game. It is also just so unbelievably horny. It is so horny.
Yeah.
In order to take over a certain business in a district in your cabaret club area that will help send fans to your cabaret club so that you can beat the other cabaret clubs in this like hostess off, you have to watch real live action, like real, not softcore pornography, but like girls in bikinis, like licking balloons or like squeezing their butt in between two pillows or what, like it, which
it's
I'm familiar with the existence of these videos because I've been alive and in like anime and video game culture for years.
Yeah.
But like what, this was the first time I ever watched one and I was like, wait, why wouldn't you just watch pornography? Like, why wouldn't you go that extra step?
Why buy the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue when you can buy Hustler? But there's a market for it. I think there's people who are like, maybe like, that's too much for me, but I'll, you know, I don't know. I agree. It's bizarre.
It might be cultural too. Like it might just be like like this is sort of like more culturally acceptable than pornography. Cause like I hadn't seen any of that before. And then the one that I did see, the vibe that I sort of got from it was, hey, this isn't pornography, but like you can kind of imagine if it was, right?
Right.
Like you could sort of like, you see what we're trying to do. You get it.
Well, and this is the thing. The game is not subtle about it.
No.
So you are going to there's like an erotic video you know, like just basically like a little room that you could go to in either of the maps, and you go up to this, you pay a clerk, you go into your own like booth, and then you are watching like a VHS of this, you know, again, this real like JAV star in this, who's and you're watching this on a CRT, and then the way this sequence always ends is there's a close up of your character moaning, and then a shot of a box of tissues. So like the implication is very clear. There's another one like that. There's a character who Luca. I don't know if either of you did Luca's sub story, but Luca is a woman who is a hostess at the arcade at one of the like six arcades. And she, like, you go through this whole quest, and you reach a certain point. She's like, hey, if you beat my high score, I'm going to give you the ride of your life. And he's like, the ride of my life? This is Kiryu. And then the camera zooms in on his crotch and then zooms in on her crotch.
Jesus.
Like, it's like, we got it. We understood what you were implying.
It's like shaking you. Like, do you get it?
We don't allow subtext here.
There's so many sub-stories that, I mean, I think there's 30 for each character, right?
Yes.
I think
there's more than that. It's maybe like 45 is a lot.
It's an enormous amount of side quests that you go on. And some of those side quests end in like, you get like an object or like something, a piece of armor or a special sword or whatever. But as you progress through this game, or at least for me, because we were trying to hit this deadline, I resented when people wanted to talk to me.
Yes.
Because I was like, oh my God, dude, just fucking tell me, hey, go beat up my dad. And I'll be like, fine, I'll fucking do it. Like, I don't need to hear like, well, one time my dad and I were good friends and we went out on a boat together and we had a good drink. And then you cut to Majima and he's like, huh? And then you cut back to the guy and he's like, but that was before my dad lost his job. And you're clicking through each line of dialogue and it takes so fucking long. Like, some of that was frustrating. And I don't know if that's because I was trying to compress this experience into a month's time, and this game should be played over like 6 months, or if that was just something that would have naturally ended up frustrating me on a regular style playthrough.
Yeah,
I think it's the latter, because the way that it's structured is that characters will just be walking down the street, and then one of these cutscenes will just begin. Like, it's not like there's a character with a question mark over their head and they'll be like, oh, I want to go talk to this person. And like, oh, there's clearly a quest here. Let's see what's going on. I can ignore this if I like. The quest will just initiate, and you can choose to do it now or do it later. Although early on in the game, it's not clear if you decline something that will be available for you later on. So you're just like, sort of like, well, shit, I'll help this rockabilly band that's nervous prep for their show real quick. I mean, I'm supposed to be investigating my friend's murder, but I guess I can take some time to do this. But there's so many of these, and they're by and large so silly and so low stakes. But I agree with you that it's too much. And then also, like, it's not clear enough that it just interrupts the flow of the game that you're trying to play. Like, you can be in the middle of another quest, and then one of these will start up out of nowhere just because you're walking down a particular street.
I think maybe this would be less fun. And as I'm expressing it, I know it would be less fun. But I think that on quests in the main game, where it's like, oh shit, I gotta get across town or they're gonna get to the warehouse before me. And then the music changes and it's like dun 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 dun. If that music's playing, side quests should not activate. Because you can't be running down the street and then a guy steps out and it's like boom doo doo doo.
Yeah.
And he's like, hey man, I think I lost my shoe in that McDonald's. And like, okay. Step over, like handling this dude's fucking foot problems or whatever. And then after that quest ends, which is a significant amount of time, that thunderous action music kicks back in and you're like, right.
This is a thing you made a point either of characterizing this game as a JRPG, which I think is you said this we were texting earlier, which I think is a good way to think of it. It's kind of a JRPG with beat 'em up combat. And my understanding is the latest entry of the series just straight up has turn based combat. So they've kind of leaned into that. But so like in like a Dragon Quest, which you compared this to. There's, you know, like a demon who is going to eat all of time. And I am the chosen hero who has to stop this universe threatening, this existential like threat. Yes, it is absurd for me to stop in this town and help this old woman get her cat off of her roof. You know, like that's an absurd thing for me to be doing because there's something much more urgent. However, the way this is paced, it feels like there is room for these sorts of, you know, these sorts of side quests, these sorts of diversions from the main narrative. It feels like, yes, there is this important thing that needs to be taken care of, but it is not urgent as to the moment. Because the spaces are so compressed and because of what the story beats are, and there's so many of them, it will be like the scenario you mentioned, Heather, basically happened to me when a guy, an NPC who is my ally, had been shot a bunch of times and I had to bring him medicine. And it's like, that is a thing that feels extremely urgent. It does not make any sense for me to be managing my cabaret club for six shifts, but I have the option to do that.
Yes.
Or like, oh shit, I gotta go get medicine from my friend. Hold on, I'm gonna stop in here and have like a 5-course sashimi meal. Yeah. And a nice conversation.
Yeah.
with this chef whose friendship I am building. Like I'm building, yes, a relationship with this chef so that I can unlock his story early or later. And you can only go in if you are hungry. You can't go in and eat if you don't have any. Unless you're going to take damage on purpose, like you're like, oh, I'll go back into this restaurant. And so sometimes after a big fight, when something is happening that you need to take care of immediately, it is the best time to sit down for a nice meal in a fancy restaurant.
Right, because you get achievements, you unlock more of the CP, which is another in-game currency that lets you upgrade your character by just having every menu item at a particular restaurant. You get like a CP for that. So there's just so much in this game. It's just so dense. It's just it feels unrelenting, and it's hard to even find a time to.
Yeah,
you know, I was reading. Like I look at the Patient Gamers subreddit, which I find is like, you know, if you're an adult with limited time, as we all are, it's like an interesting, usually interesting discussions there because we have people getting into games like 6 years late, like we are with Yakuza 0. And someone's criticism of this was like, I can't play this for short stretches. Like I can maybe play some other open world games and like boot this up for 30 minutes and mess around a little bit. Because you never know if a little girl is going to stop you and demand that you get a red squirrel out of a claw machine, and that is going to absorb your entire playtime. These things can happen, or that you'll trigger a cinematic, and that cinematic will take 40 minutes. You'll have, yes, a 40-minute non-interactive sequence where you're just watching a bunch of different characters talk about this underworld intrigue.
Can I say something about that real quick?
Yes, please.
This happened to me consistently throughout my playthrough. I'm playing on Xbox. And the cinematics would be so long sometimes that my Xbox would start to go into rest mode. Like it would like completely like pause and then like almost like shut down. And I had to like unpause it because I was just watching it. Cause that is the benefit of, or you know, I guess the one of the plus sides of the cutscenes. The cutscenes are all very good. And like,
they're good.
I was really, I mean, I was so enthralled in the story that I wasn't even holding my controller sometimes. I was just, like, watching this, like, animated, like, Yakuza movie, basically. But the other part of it that I was, like, hyper aware of was that because it's all in Japanese, I was like, I've never played a game that wasn't at least, like, all, you know, voiced in English. I'd never played an all Japanese game before. So I had to read every single word that was on the screen so I knew what was happening. But they also do a good job of, like, at the end of every couple chapters, they tell you, like, hey, here's what was going on before.
Love the
recaps, in the other story, you know, or, you know, what while you were away, here's what was going on. And so I loved having that recap as well. But those cutscenes, Kojima-esque in length and very, just as ambitious as well.
Very long. The writer, we should say, Masayoshi Yokoyama, is the main credited writer in the Yakuza series. It's kind of, and then Toshihiro Nagoshi, who famously previous most famous game, I think, was Daytona USA, is kind of the Sega guy who, you know, who created and shepherded the Yakuza franchise.
Wow.
The cutscenes and the main story is like a Yakuza drama. Like, mm-hmm. It's like a full television series that takes place over the course of your many hours of gameplay. And I was shocked at how good the acting was.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, you could feel weight and arrogance off of these characters, and their facial animations were subtle enough that you were like, oh, this dude's terrifying. Like, if I met this guy, I would be so scared that I would not know what to do in interacting with this man. Also, I have no knowledge about like Japanese mafia hierarchy or how any of this works or if this game is at all accurate. But the rules of Yakuza life are insane.
Mm-hmm.
They're insane. And I'm not talking about like, hey, help this fucking dog get into a fireman's outfit or whatever the fuck this is. Like, I'm not talking about that shit. I'm talking about like, okay, the premise of the game is that because Kiryu beat up a dude in the empty lot and that dude was later murdered, so he's being framed for the murder. Because of that, he needs to take responsibility for the murder, which means that he and his boss are going to be killed. Like, it's such an insane set of respect rules or like who takes responsibility for what, that every time there'd be like a dramatic turn, I'd be like, really? That's
right.
That's going to be okay. Yeah, okay, I guess if I got shot, it would be my fault in the Yakuza, because like somebody would be like, don't you understand what this does to us?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, yes, I do, I understand.
It's, you know, you mentioned, the drama is really, really good and like super compelling, and I was super sucked in by it. I pulled a Steam review that I think is like characterizes this well. It's like, this game is like watching The Godfather with occasional episodes of The Simpsons in between scenes. That's by Ma Rift on the Steam store. I think that, you know, maybe a show that kind of is that is The Sopranos, which has like some really super funny, like, you know, goofy stuff and characters. And it's never as silly as this game is, but then also just absolutely crushes the dramatic arcs. So, yeah, it's a fascinating, it's just a fascinating experience to play. I really didn't know what to expect going in. I'd heard so many people are super into this series, and I'd always been interested in it. It's, you know, it's the kind of game I like. I'm just it's so gripping and frustrating and maddening, but also like just so fun too. It's all of these things at once.
Yeah, there are 10. If you're ranking score wise, there are 10 experiences in Yakuza and there are also like threes.
Yes.
And they are absolutely those things too. It's like, this is off the charts awesome. What I'm doing right now is off the charts awesome. And there are also times where I'm like, I cannot fucking stand this. And there is nothing redeemable about this moment. And they're cobbled together in this game with no regard for one another. Like, you can have the coolest fucking moment right before you have one of the worst moments. It's like taking a shower where somebody keeps changing the temperature of the water.
I think the localization must have been so tough for this game, A, because there's so much dialogue, but B, because there's so much Japanese cultural stuff that they're trying to figure out a way to translate for a Western audience. Like, you know, I mentioned the honorifics earlier, like there's suffixes. They'll be like, you know, like, hey, why did you call me like Kiryu-kun? You should be calling me Kiryu-chan. Like that's like, or san or whatever. Like think that's a big thing within the game that comes up a few times. Not a big thing, but it's a thing that comes up, recurs a few times that you just may not have any context for. There's also like, there was, for instance, there's one quest when I was managing the real estate empire where you're interviewing a bunch of people. I love the quest. It was super funny because you were interviewing a bunch of like seemingly qualified people. And it turned out that everyone that showed up just did it so they get free cab fare. They're like, I don't want your job. I just want your cab fare. And they like run out of there. And then so, but as one of these, the way you're trying to expose these characters, these interviewees as frauds. One of the ways you do it is this woman is, I was like, I could not figure out what the hell is going on. But Kiryu's like, something about her story doesn't add up. And it's that she says she learned to cook as a kid living in a Japanese inn. And one of her favorite dishes to make is an omelet. And he's like, and the connection you're supposed to make is like, wait, no one would cook an omelet in a traditional Japanese inn. And it's just like, I have no context for that. I have no way to figure this out. I had to consult a guide to crack it. Anyway, all that said, you finish that quest, you go outside and you ultimately hire a guy, one good guy, one guy who seems unqualified, but ends up, he's like, has a good heart. And you go outside and the other two characters who you didn't hire are beating the shit out of a dog. And so,
yeah.
And so then, and it's like, Jesus Christ, what is happening? And then the guy you did hire stops them and is just like, oh, it's a barrage of madness. I felt like I was losing my mind.
Did you play the side sub story where you have, like, it's a marriage proposal and like you have to guess like clues in a puzzle that a man has created for his girlfriend?
No.
And one of them is like, what is the opposite? Like, it's like, if you didn't like a guy, you'd call him a soy sauce face. What is the opposite?
Yeah.
And you're like, every choice in that puzzle is nonsense. You're like, I have no idea what it is that you call. And I was like, no sauce? Or no, I chose no salt. That man has no salt. Like, as I was like, oh, soy sauce is kind of salty. And so like the opposite would be like a no salt face. Mm-hmm. And that was wrong. And there was there's nothing you could do. It's just like, nope, sorry that you didn't get a good result out of this side quest.
Yeah, I was like, there was a pork bun question where it was like, what's an item you would have with a hot mustard? I was like, I don't know. I'll pick pork bun because I think I would dip a pork bun in some hot mustard. And they were, the NPC was incensed. Like, what, who the hell would do that? What the fuck are you talking about?
That's my favorite thing about when you're wrong. They treat you like the biggest idiot on earth. Because like there's like some of the, like we were talking earlier about like the honorifics in this game of like, there's other like members of like, I guess higher up Yakuza or like other people you have to meet throughout the game and stuff. And you have to set this meeting like at a restaurant. There's one, there's a sequence where you're at a restaurant and you have to make sure you're sitting in the right spot. And like, what do you do when you get up? Like, what do you do when the person comes to your table? Like, and to sit down with you, do you get up and greet them and stuff like that? And I would not make it as a Yakuza because they would think I was the rudest person alive because they just wouldn't let me. I'd be so rude.
You're not polite enough to be a murderer.
No.
I will say that we haven't really talked about the art in this game, but I think the character designs are so good. And I think that as, you know, like for a game that was last gen, came out on, I think it came out on PS3 as well as PS4.
Yeah, PS3.
It looks fantastic. I think the art is so good. I mean, the higher ups, the Yakuza higher ups all look like a distinct like flavor of piece of shit. Like, they look like super cool, but also just so slimy, which is so great. And then I think the protagonists look awesome. The ladies are easy on the eyes.
I also like the environments.
Yes. Yeah. Environments look great.
Yeah. Like, there's a day-night cycle. So, like, you can wander around what is effectively Kabukicho at night, and all the neons lit up, and it's really cool. Yeah. And also... even though you can't enter into every building, if you approach a lot of buildings, there's sound that comes from inside those buildings. So you'll hear like the sounds of a restaurant, or you'll hear the sounds of a convenience store. Like, you can go in those, which like is really nicely immersive. You never hear businesses in Grand Theft Auto when you're outside of the business, right?
Yeah. It is, I would say, contrasting it with like a GTA, it is, because I think it's so compact and it there's so many NPCs, and you can't just like kill anyone. You can't just like run up and like beat the shit out of a random person. Like, they're just like sort of civilians. You can only fight when you're in combat mode. It feels a lot. It feels so alive. It feels so like vibrant and like a real city.
Although you can't run up to most civilians and beat them up. But if you see a drunk guy, you can go shove him and then he'll be like, hey, what are you? Fuck you. And then you can murder him and curb stomp that guy.
Yes.
Like, you can pick fights with some people.
Well, that's what I love, is like you'll hit someone. You'll pick up a signpost. And you will hit, like, club someone over the head with it, and then you will crack it over their face like you're hitting a T-ball. And then the combat will end, and then they'll just be down on their knees like, oh, I'm sorry, man, you're really tough. It's just like, I just killed you.
Yeah, there's one, I think, that Kiru did, where in beast mode, when you're, because you have different fighting styles.
Stances,
My favorite was beast, because it was just, You can pick people up and throw them at other people. But there was one attack where if you did this to anyone, they would die. Like 100% die, like for real, immediately. There's absolutely no way a human being could survive this, I think. Where so he picks you up over his head and you're upside down, and he slams you down on the ground head first into concrete.
Right.
You would die immediately.
Yes.
It's very funny, but you would absolutely get killed. Your head would crack.
There's also, in beast mode, you could pick up a motorcycle
and
bash it over somebody's head. Like, you can break a motorcycle on a person. Like, you can use
chunks of it to hit them with.
Right. These are just like random fights you're having with random enemies, which eventually you get an ability where you can throw money to evade these sort of random encounters, and these guys, instead of attacking you, will just pick up all the money you've tossed on the floor, which is weird. I meant to mention this earlier, Heather, when you're talking about the quest being annoying. There were a couple of times, so your save points are telephone booths. Again, it's set in the 80s. So your save points are payphones. There were multiple times when I went to save my game because I wanted to end my session, and the save point triggered a quest.
Yes.
It's just like, I'm trying to end my game right now, and then the payphone is ringing and I have to pick it up because I have to bring someone a 9mm like weapon. It's like, what is going on?
But that, and also, I mean, that is honestly a knock, a small knock against this game to me, is that it doesn't
have an
autosave function. Like, having to go and manually save in what I would say was a difficult to navigate map. I thought the map was a little confusing at times, until I really got like the lay of the land and stuff. But it took, because it's a big map, I would get lost often. And so trying to find a payphone, which, you know, they're marked on the map, like, it just takes too long. I hope other installments have an autosave function, but I would hope that that's true.
Yeah, I think absolutely that's a fair point. You have to be mindful of your saves. I did, playing on PC, get a few crashes, which was super annoying, and lost some progress, including having to redo one mini boss fight because of the save system. And also, I think more generally, there's an aspect of this game doesn't feel like it necessarily has respect for the player's time at all times. It's just like, there's not an easy off ramp for a lot of these things. You'll just be interrupted when you're trying to do something quickly. And so that starts to get a little bit tedious. Like, there are times when the game feels tedious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's a fun game, but it is not perfect. But also, some of those imperfections are extremely charming.
Yeah.
It's like it's a real fucking mixed bag of prizes.
It's weird. It's like, what would I change? Like, there are things I feel like I would change, but then I also kind of like that there's this, there are batting cages in there that I will never use.
Yes.
Like, I like that someone put so much time into building this batting cage minigame that I just don't want to touch. Did you guys mess around with the Telltale Boys Club?
No.
Oh, Jesus.
So in addition to the erotic videos hut, there's the Telltale Boys Club, which is where you go in and it's basically like a phone sex line. I guess this is a real thing that existed in the telephone clubs was a real thing that existed in Japan in the 80s. Well, I looked it up and apparently this was a thing. And so
does it's like this exist now? Does phone calls now Weiger question mark.
I'm looking at your overall progress on the game, Nick, and it says you spent 100 hours in this part only.
Yeah, I've basically been cloistered within the Telltale Boys Club. So it's the same sort of thing. You have a little booth with a phone. My favorite animation in the entire game is so when the phone rings, there's like a timed action where you have to press the right button to pick up the phone, and then Kiryu will pick up the phone with so much pizzazz. He'll be like, yeah, like, and then say moshi moshi. And it's like, so it's such unnecessary flair, but it's so great. And then you will have what is a combination dating. This is the way the game characterizes. It's combination like dating sim slash shooter, where you will use your right analog stick to dial a rotary phone to the, and then that will let you shoot a burst at whatever question option that's floating by or whatever response that's floating by to engage in this dialogue with this this random woman, this phone, I guess a phone sex operator. I don't know. If you play it correctly, you get to meet them at a hotel room and apparently have sex with them. And then afterwards, you're like, that was fun. And apparently you can do this with like nine different women. I was like, this is so... I can't believe how much work went into this thing that a lot of people wouldn't, two-thirds of us didn't even discover. Yeah,
I didn't even stumble upon, like, I didn't even, like, yeah. Oh, I saw this and I put it aside so that I could get to a different thing. Like, I had no idea this existed, which is a great analog to being in Tokyo, where you can be at the same bar for, like, four nights and somebody's like, hey, do you want to go to this other bar, and you're like, where is it? And they point to a door in the bar you're in and are like, it's in there. And you're like, what? I haven't seen. Okay. And then you go into a different room and it's a totally different bar. Like it's great. Like so dense.
It's so dense. And I could talk about this all day. I've already rambled on far too long, but we should get to our final thoughts on Yakuza 0. It's time for our review crew. So we'll say something positive about this game and give it a numerical decimal rating. My positive thing is we mentioned earlier that the kind of, the cabaret club, which is where you are, you know, again, amassing a bunch of hostesses to build your empire. You can spend as much or as little time in the game in that mini game as you like. But there is just like there's so much good music in this game. There's just a banger of a pop song that plays while you're in the main menu, while you're preparing your club for the night. And that's what I'm going to use as my positive thing. I'll play a little bit of this.
I wanna be your girl. Oh, yeah. It's crazy to me how many things the game does, like, well, like to have a song this good in it is wild considering how many things are in the game.
Yeah. And this is going on while you're trying to parse a menu, while you're trying to decide like which one strap dress you're going to put on which hostess to increase her like, you know, beauty score or whatever. Anyway, it's great. It's a game I think about when I'm not playing it, for better or worse, but I feel like it's kind of a madman's masterpiece. Mm-hmm. And I always respect things like that. I'm gonna give this a 9.1. I really loved my time with it. I'm gonna keep playing it. In fact, I wanna be playing it now. It's just so fun. And the stuff that annoys me about it is also stuff that I find compelling. I don't know, Heather, what do you think?
Well, my positive thing about a game with lots of positive things is a thing we haven't even talked about, which is the disco mini game where you dance with a partner at a club. And why I like this mini game is that I'm a human being who cannot dance.
Mm-hmm.
But it breaks down the concept of dancing in a way that makes sense to me. Like, oh, yes, this is essentially what dancing is. You have to be in specific poses at specific times in the music. And the more complicated your approach to those poses is, the better you are as a dancer. So it'll be like there's a grid of what kind of looks like a disco floor as your UI. And there's a slowly fading triangle button in the top corner of the grid. And if you take a complicated route with the D-pad up to that corner and then press the button, you are making a more complicated dance move on the dance floor itself. And I was like, this is, I mean, somebody got free beers after this fucking, like somebody was like, what if it's like this? And everybody was like, that's awesome. When you are training, when you're training a hostess and you have to go dance and be like a better dancer than her, if you fail that task, which I did twice, she you go back to the hostess club and she is so destroyed. She's so upset. And she's like, wow, I didn't expect to be a better dancer than you. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what's going on. And she's like, you suck at dancing. I learned nothing. And then you get like a zero. And I loved it. I do feel like my frustrations with the game were more numerous than Nick's. Mm. And so I'm not willing to give it a 9, even though it is... It's a better game than Vroom in the Night Sky, which I gave a 10 to. But also, like, here's what causes demerits in a score for me. It's anytime I'm angry while playing a video game, not frustrated, not like, oh, this is a hard boss to fight, or, oh man, I can't figure out, like, I'm not good enough at racing this car. But when a game just like flat out is making me angry because it is something I can't change about the game or do better, then I feel like it knocks it down a score. So I'm giving it an 8.9.
Still a very good score.
Wow. For 1989.
Yeah, there you go.
I love that. Okay, there's so many things I want to shout out, things we didn't even really touch on. Like, there's like so many great...
We've been talking about this game.
I know.
For over an hour, but and there's so much stuff we haven't touched on.
There are so many funny side characters, like Mr. Libido. We haven't talked about Mr. Libido, who is a
walking
adult
erection.
Man. He's, walking erection, and he's just wearing like a diaper. He's like basically a nude man in a diaper. He's very funny. There's Mr. Shakedown, who is a giant man who, if he sees you, he will beat you up and take all of your money. And you can also rob him when he's asleep. He's a great character. But aside from that, one of my favorite sequences in the game, because I finished the story, the overall story.
Right.
And there's a part in Majima's story in Chapter 11 where you have to go. You meet up with this detective and you have to go underground, like underwater, basically, to this underwater prison, like called the Bed of Sticks. And it's where all these criminals, murderers who are too dangerous for the streets and too dangerous for above ground prisons are sent so they can fight and kill each other. And it is so fucking, this to me makes this game it takes it from just a Grand Theft Auto thing to like a Grand Theft Auto slash like Metal Gear slash Kingdom Hearts sort of type lore, where some of it's pretty straightforward, but then you have something as wild as this, and I loved the idea of Bed of Sticks is so interesting to me that I'm like, I'm shocked that this isn't a movie. I was so like, this idea rocks. I love this. So there was that, and then there was, one screenshot that I wanted to shout out. It's the final thing that Majima says, because like I said, I loved Majima. The final thing Majima says before you start the sequence, when you're at the point of no return.
The Bed of Sticks is where you fight the Joker, right?
Yeah, there's like a Joker in there. There's like a Chucky. There's like a human-sized Chucky. Okay. So this is what Majima says right before you hit the point of no return. This is probably my last day on Earth. Gonna make sure I go out with nothing left undone. So like that's giving you an option. You can go back outside and you know, finish any sort of side things before you finish the game. But the sentence, "This is probably my last day on Earth," is such a funny, definitive statement.
Right.
And it rocks. And I love this game. I was shocked. I took this game to the beach. I played it on my backbone. I could not stop playing this thing. I loved it. I'm going to give it a 10. I fucking loved Yakuza.
Wow.
And this is, there's stuff I haven't done. I want to go back in and do these other things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you gotta do the cabaret club. Gotta do the real estate empire. Well, those were our thoughts on Yakuza 0, but maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've scrounged from the internet. And if we had a positive take on the game, these would be negative reviews. And if we had a negative take on the game, these would be positive reviews. It's maybe we were wrong. I've got a review from Metacritic. Or maybe this is Steam Store. I don't remember where I got this. Oh, no. It's just a screenshot of a random review. 67 hours at review time. So I guess that's the Steam Store. I'm giving this game a thumbs down specifically due to the catfight game. It's completely rigged. I used a script that would hit the E key at almost 30 times a second to test whether or not the effort is actually rewarded. Turns out, even if you're fucking Superman, you can't win some of the draws from rock, paper, scissors. What a fucking joke.
Yes. So the cat fight, this is another thing about the cat fight game that I discovered. And I, you know, again, I had to go deep to get any intel on this because it's so obtuse. So if it's like, for instance, rock versus rock, that goes into a button mash mini game. It'll be like, mash the buttons. But the way that the AI works is they will only mash back when you mash. So you're honestly probably better served to just leave it a chance and not even touch the controller. But if you are going to touch the controller, you like tap A, you like once a second, like literally like once a second until it's towards the end, and then tap as fast as you can. And the AI won't be able to catch up with you. I found that to be a pretty reliable way to win those standoffs. But again, why would that be how it works? That doesn't make any sense at all. I've got one from the aforementioned Patient Gamer subreddit, and I thought this was just like, this was something that that resonated with me. This is posted by you, Periwin. I've discovered a major pitfall of being an overly patient gamer on multiple platforms. So by and large, a PC gamer, I've had a PS3 library sitting on my backlog for nearly a decade, figuring someday I'll get around to it. In my living situation, I don't really have a good comfortable setup for console gaming on my PC. So I figured time to knock some of these out. Well, I've run into a major snag. I forgot in the late 2000s to 2010s, this game came out in 2015, was the era when game companies were obsessed with QTEs, quick time events, especially the X button. I have been using an Xbox One controller for gaming on the PC. X is in a totally different spot than on the PS3 controller. Due to my muscle memory, I've been failing QTE after QTE to the point where I'm close to giving up on some of these games. I had the exact same thing happen to me in reverse, which is that, you know, I mostly play on PlayStation platforms or Switch. I mean, Xbox, I use Game Pass on PC, or when I used to have an Xbox, whatever the old Xbox was, Series X. It wasn't Series X, right?
No, what
the
fuck Xbox was it? One.
Xbox One X.
Yeah, stupid.
When I had an Xbox One, I would play Game Pass games on that. But like, it's the you know, again, being prompted with X and having to relearn where X is like a little bit of like a, I again, don't know a good way to do this. Eventually came around to it. It just took enough hours of gameplay to immerse yourself with a controller layout. But I would literally have to be like, okay, before I'm going to do this X, Y, A, B, that's where these things are positioned, just to try to like drill it into my skull. I don't know if there's a good, there isn't a good solution for this. I guess it's just play your multi-platform games on one platform and deal with it.
I mean, I guess you could make button placement universal. I mean, the PlayStation only, like you just have a consortium of games and be like, well, it's always B then A. And then it's
right.
X is always here. And then you can choose your symbols or whatever the fuck else you want to put. You know, like they could do that. They could. Just,
yeah. Get fucking get on the ball, Congress.
What?
They're too busy investigating this January 6th thing. Trying to put
I have another review here, if mm-hmm. we have time.
Yeah.
This is a 4. This person reviewed it in 2019. I think the name here is Kunao. I don't know. I got Yakuza 0 in this month's Humble Bundle. What am I, Nick Weiger? I was really looking forward to playing this game since I'd been eyeing it on Steam for a while. Honestly, I'm glad I never pulled the trigger on this title. When I first saw it on Steam, the store page gave me the idea that it would be kind of like Grand Theft Auto, only with Yakuza. And it's not really the case at all. For me, Yakuza 0 feels like a visual novel with sparse moments in between where you can walk around, get in fights, that sort of thing. But the game never feels deep enough or interactive enough to be able to really capture my attention all that much. It feels like Grand Theft Auto super light. The city map isn't all that big, and the things you have access to are few and far between. There are very few times that you are really given the chance to actually make any sort of decisions. And when you do, it never feels like it has any sort of impact. Another aspect that I found fairly annoying is that this game is rated M for mature for blood, intense violence, sexual content, strong language, use of alcohol. It's pretty ironic that Yakuza 0 managed to get an M rating and actually failed to deliver on almost any of these aspects. If you're going to be an M-rated game, you should own it. Yakuza 0 actually goes out of its way to constantly avoid showing any sort of graphic violence. The blood shown in the game is fairly tame by almost all standards. The intense violence is PG-13 at best. Use of alcohol is some dudes drinking beers. And as far as sexual content goes, if you consider lingerie that literally covers everything, then you are a pearl-clutching prude. Sure, they say the F word, but so does everyone at my job.
Oh my God.
Like, wow. This guy fucks.
Yeah, this is just like a regular Yakuza.
We didn't even talk about that just made me, while you're talking, I was like thinking of like the quest where these random people are beating the shit out of a politician. You save him. And then he's like, oh, I want to take you out for a meal. And then it turns out he wants to raise taxes. And then Kiryu's mad at him. <It's> like, this is so weird.
Not only is he raising taxes, but you are developing his tax plan. That's
right, right. Yeah.
The interactions you have, it's like, what do you think should be taxed, Kiryu? And it's like, your options are like everything or only the rich or just on Mondays or something like that. It's like yeah, tobacco, bananas. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so, every part of it is so fucking weird. Ah, God. I don't know. I don't know what to say. I don't know how many different ways to say this game is weird and qualifies for the premise of this podcast. But also it being on Game Pass, man, if you're looking for something to absorb a bunch of your time, and I also think you can get a sense of what this game is and whether it's going to be for you. Matt, Heather, I think you'd probably agree within the first, like 2 to 4 hours, you kind of get into the game and are like, okay, this is going to work for me, or this is not going to click for me at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I think if you have Game Pass and are curious, try it out, because I loved it.
That statement, though, you'll get a sense within the first 2 or 4 hours, is not something you would say if we were like a movie review podcast or like, you know, if you take a while, or like a TV show thing, watch an episode, see if you like it. Like, no, you still have to commit half a day's work to know whether or not this is okay.
Yes.
That you might like this.
Right.
Yeah.
That's games. Hey, it's time for the question block.
All right. This one's from Lucifer Alpha on Twitter. And they write, this is about Yakuza. Sort of. This franchise lived in relative obscurity for about 10 years until it popped. What franchise do you think has been criminally overlooked that you would love to finally become popular?
Very good question. Yeah, I you know, from what I've read,
Yakuza 0 is kind of the game that put this franchise on the map with Western audiences. Before there, it was a little bit more of a niche game and more just very, you know, popular enough in Japan to earn six sequels and a prequel, but, you know, hadn't really like a had a breakout. Yeah, an obscure franchise that we like. You know what? I'll say one that I wouldn't mind getting a new entry of, which is Peggle. I always thought Peggle was like such a great puzzle action game. I think it's like up there with, you know, all your match threes. It's like, you know, like a Tetris in the same sort of like being it being just like a great time waster. But it's also or like a puzzle bobble. It's kind of a similar mechanic to a puzzle bobble. And those games are so fun. They're so I love the aesthetic. It's such a great reward when you finish one of those maps, and it's map dependent because each of them has kind of their own kind of puzzle. So it's not like one that you get like Tetris where you can just like play it endlessly. Like you need new maps after a certain point. And kind of like Pachinko, I guess, is another way to describe it. I mean, it kind of is Pachinko with a little bit more user control. And I feel like there was just Peggle. There was Peggle Knights, and there was maybe a Peggle for mobile, and then that was it. I feel like the franchise has maybe been just off the map, and I would love to see a new Peggle. Like,
there's
give me a
Peggle
new Peggle.
Too.
Why not?
There, remember,
oh, there's Peggle too. Okay. Yes.
The guy at E3, there's like a whole, he was like a meme, this
right.
guy. Because he was overjoyed to announce Peggle 2, and nobody seemed to care as much as him.
And that was almost 10 years ago when Peggle 2 came out. So it's been a while. Maybe there are new Peggles and I just haven't noticed.
What about you?
Man, this is a hard question. I don't have an immediate answer, which makes me wonder if all the games I play are popular or if I'm like, can't think of anything being like, oh, people should play this, which is literally the concept of Heather's Hole. So I don't...
What is like, there all Dreamcast franchise, maybe like a Power Stone or something?
I mean, like, sure. I wish there was more Typing of the Dead. I wish that there was, I wish there were more F-Zero games.
There you go.
I wish, I don't know. I wish there were still Secret of Mana games that were actual sprite based Secret of Mana games instead of what, you know, why isn't Mother 3 come out here? There's a lot of answers, but nothing like what you just described, Nick. So I feel like I've come up short here.
I think that's a good, the Mother franchise, like if Earthbound was like more of a hit in the States, or there was like a resurgence of it, and we just started getting new Mothers, and the Mothers were all being ported here. It wasn't like there was one that was ever ported. I mean, that feels like that would absolutely qualify.
Yeah. So... I guess. I don't know. Abadaka, you got an answer for this?
I do, but now looking at it, it's going to seem like such an odd answer because
It's Yakuza?
It's Yakuza, yeah. It's like this one. Duh. No, it's because there's a movie. They made a movie based about it. So like that, you could argue that that is a case for it being popular already, but the movie is not good, and they shouldn't have made it. And I think... I'd still think it's an...
Talking about Postal?
No, Postal 2 specifically. No, the Prince of Persia franchise, I think, is so good and so interesting. The gameplay is so fun. And, like, obviously those games, like, Prince of Persia and the Sands of Time is considered one of the greatest games of all time. So, like, of course that's popular. But what I'm saying is to ignore that and give me more of them because I'm asking. I want more. Right. Give me a PS5 version. I know they're coming out with the remake that looks like shit, but hopefully they are taking this delay and making the graphics a little nicer because they look bad. But I think it's such a good, it's one of my favorite franchises ever. I love it.
Yeah, that I mean, that God, it Sands of Time sort of set up for it was such like a great like it was a completely new thing, but it was kind of like a translation of that, you know, tone into 3D. I'd remember the old 2D, you know, messed around with the old 2D ones.
Yes.
Which were just so gloriously animated. I shared with you the Super Famicom port of Prince of Persia, the first one, the 2D one.
Yes.
Has like
maybe the best box art I've ever seen. I put that in the chat, and we were talking about this earlier.
Yeah, but unbelievably cool.
Yeah, Google that. It's just like, it's so, God, it looks so fucking rad. Just like, it's like, I want to play that. And the game's not exactly that, but it's still very good.
I was going to say, the game isn't really this at all, but it's such an interesting promise.
Yeah.
I love it. And, but like, give me this game. Yeah. Make this one.
Yeah, give me that skeleton who's in lava for some reason.
Give me that guy with six arms back there.
And a cute little mouse in the foreground. That's fun.
You play as the mouse. That's the game.
Hey, hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod, or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 616-2-PLAY. That's 616-275-2933. Music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs. And Matt, it's time for you to tell us next week's game.
Next week's game, Phoenix Wright Ace Attorney. Goodbye, everyone.
Goodbye, Bucket.
Edge. Do you want me to, like, cut off my butt?